40 years is a long time to lie in a grave with no name. 40 years is a long time to go missing. And 40 years is a long time to keep a family secret. On a hot July day in 1974, a young girl found the mutilated body in the Provincetown Dunes that would come to be known as the Lady in the Dunes. Her hands were missing, her head almost completely cut off, her long reddish hair, pink toenail polish, and a mouthful of extensive, very expensive gold and porcelain dental work were all that remained to identify her. Sandra, then 9 years old, was walking her dog. She says she was one of the people that found the body.
When I approached her, it wasn't her that held my interest anymore. Something else captured my attention, and it was a noise. Imagine holding a pearl necklace in your hands and rolling it around, the sound that would make.
She approached the area slowly.
When I reached my dog, I looked to my right, and there I saw the dead body. She was naked, face down. The lower half of her body had been covered in feeding maggots, live maggots. That was the sound of what I believed to be similar to a pearl necklace jiggling around.
Jim Meads was the Provincetown police chief at the time.
And the whole area was pine needles. And if you ever laid in pine needles, you'd know you'd want to lay on a towel. Well, she didn't lay on us entirely. She shared it with someone. Mm-hmm. And she had neatly folded dungarees for her head. And all of a sudden, she got murdered. And the stumps of her hands were embedded into the pine needles.
Mead says the investigation into her identity was extensive, including who had registered their off-road vehicles to be driving there around that time.
Well, actually, we went through every rooming house in Provincetown. We went through campgrounds. We wrote individual letters to every dentist in Massachusetts through the district attorney's office. We went through Interpol, and it was all legwork. I mean, we didn't have DNA. We didn't have the luxuries that they have today. We don't know how much information we shared with other police departments and how much of an effort they put into the information we were giving them to look for people who owned these vehicles that were in the seashore that day.
Mead said he had been determined to find her identity before he retired, even going so far as to visit a famous psychic in New York City.
All six boxes dealing with the bloody clothing and all, and went to see a psychic. Actually pinpointed the area without ever having been to Provincetown and told me where the hands were buried. And I was all excited, ready to excavate the beach area, only to find out that a month or two before, they had put a full basement in and took the sand away. And she insisted that the hands were buried there.
Still think about her sometimes?
Yes, I do. Every once in a while, I think about what I should have done and could have done and didn't do. But it's all over now.
Meads died on Christmas night, 2011. For a number of years, it was thought that Rory Jean Kessinger, with an extensive criminal background and who bore a physical resemblance to the Lady in the Dunes and had escaped from the Plymouth County House of Corrections a year before, might just be the Lady in the Dunes. Bill Bolter retired from the Pembroke Police Department several years ago, but he still remembers the night in 1973 local police raided the house on Oldham Street and his encounter with Rory Jean.
So I ran out through the small field out to the wooded area, and that's where I came across Rory Jean. She had tripped and fell. She was in a very skimpy nightgown, and so she got up, and I actually had her at gunpoint at the time, and then she had said to me that she was looking for the guy that just raped her.
Bolter went to use the phone to get backup.
I turned the light on and went back, made another telephone call, and she came back into the room with a pistol in her hand, said she was sorry, but she had to kill me.
Armed with a search warrant, they came back to the house.
I saw cocaine that was being measured out on a scale. There was guns in there. There was
what types of guns?
There was like an assault weapon with a clip in it, which I think we found later was loaded. There was pistols and knives and money, and later we had found that whatever drug that they were doing in the 70s was there.
Rory Jean Kessinger was arrested and taken to the hospital, where she attempted to grab another officer's weapon and kill him, too.
And it wasn't very long after they took the cuffs off that she made a bolt and ran out the door. Dave Wood chased her, and being very careful, on when you arrest a woman. I believe what he did, what he told me anyway, was that he put both hands on her shoulders and pinned her against the wall outside to hold her there till the matron got there. She reached down, and he had a small .38, which they call a chief special. He didn't have it snapped in, and she actually disarmed him, took the weapon away from him, pulled the trigger, and said, "Die, you effing pig." He reached down with his hand, and the hammer on the gun got caught on the web between his thumb and his first finger. So she had all intentions of shooting him also, you know, with his own weapon. The matron then came, put her back in cuffs again, and they brought her back in the hospital, and this time they told the doctor to go do whatever he had to do, but the cuffs weren't coming off.
Rory Jean was arraigned on several drug charges along with attempted murder. Bolter says several men in a private jet arrived at the Plymouth airport to attend her arraignment. Very unusual, especially for 1973.
Two guys in black suits, and they walked into the courtroom with a big suitcase full of money. And whatever the money was, they were going to bail her out in cash right there.
Rory Jean was ordered held without bail, taken to the House of Corrections, and 3 months later...
she actually sawed a couple of the bars on the cell so that she could get out. And she got out, and they had a car waiting for her. And they picked her up, and she was gone. And nobody's seen her since.
So that was it. She just literally disappeared.
Disappeared.
He also said he later confronted one of the men arrested with her and asked, "Where is she?"
We were at the courthouse one day up in Brockton. We just happened to be getting in the elevator the same time he was getting in the elevator with the sheriff. We asked him in the elevator as we were going up to the top floor, "Whatever happened to Rory Jean?" And he just smiled and said, "You don't have to worry about ever finding her. She's pushing up daisies." We said, "Well, where is she?" And he said, "You'll never find her."
Rory Jean Kessinger's life of crime and running from the law began when she was just 15 and ran away from home.
The whole thing just seemed really strange to me. They told us that it was middle to high echelon drug traffickers back then. So there was definitely big money and big people involved in it. So, and I'm sure she knew who she was working with.
Bolter says there was a connection between the Pembroke home and Provincetown.
The detective down there was very interested in getting that information, and we gave him the information that we had checked on that car and found that it was listed to that person on Provincetown. So that was another thing that kind of clued us in, that why would somebody from a Provincetown restaurant be in Pembroke at a drug house? And that's where the Lady in the Dunes was found.
Provincetown Detective Warren Tobias worked on the Lady in the Dunes case a long time as well, including several times when her body was exhumed from the grave for DNA sampling to try and match her to Rory Jean Kessinger. Using DNA from her mother, Kessinger was eventually ruled out as the Lady in the Dunes. Also ruled out, a missing Florida woman whose dental charts, except for one tooth, were identical to the Lady in the Dunes.
It was so crazy for me. And in my head, I still can't quite assimilate all the information, and I'll tell you why. The dental charts were so identical, except for one tooth. One tooth. And I'm thinking, okay, dentists can make a mistake, right? Right? We did DNA, and again, same thing. Not even close. Not even from the same, you know, heritage.
I asked a local spirit medium, Tiffany Rice, for her impressions about the Lady in the Dunes.
A lot of times spirit will show me with a scent or give me the sensation of a scent. Sometimes I hear them. Sometimes I see them visually in my mind's eye. And yes, when we were reviewing this case, there was a strong sense of cigarette smell. Also, I could hear a car engine just revving and revving and revving. Whether they are tied in with the case or not, those are all things that I was being shown. There is still someone out there.
During my research into this story, a chance remark to a relative about the latest likeness produced of the Lady in the Dunes prompted a comment. She said there was a cousin from New York who, in fact, did look like that picture and disappeared around that same time. The young woman had been involved with a New York City mobster.
And, of course, he had plenty of money and he could take her to the best places. Limousines galore, champagne galore, jewelry galore.
Her family fought the relationship.
You know, months later, maybe even a year, she was no longer around. She was gone. The family tried very hard to find her and spent a lot of money on private detectives, and they just couldn't find her. She was gone. She's missing.
Several weeks after the missing cousin's name was run through a law enforcement database, her brother posted on a Facebook page that his sister was doing well and working in Europe. No current photo was posted, no employer or country were named, no other family members have seen her in decades. Is she in a witness protection program, or is this just the fear that one family lives with? We don't know. The lady in the dunes has never been identified, but they haven't stopped working on her case, even exploring the possibility of a Whitey Bulger connection. Rory Jean Kessinger was never seen or heard from again. The latest run of her fingerprints came up empty. They number in the thousands, those people, many of whom are women and children, who go missing every year, those who lie waiting to be identified or buried in Potter's Fields. But it doesn't mean they haven't left behind people who love them and still want to know where they are. Christine James, WATD News.